Hello, hello everybody. Hello Charleston and welcome to The Fields Church. I'm Travis Spencer, lead pastor, and we are so glad everyone is here. We're so glad you're there in Charleston. Remember that we may not be in the same room today, but one church, different locations with one heartbeat to reach our communities and to do what we can do to just show people God's love. And so thanks for being a part of the Fields Church today. We are a life-giving church. Our prayer is that today you experience that. You experience this life that God can give you. So thanks for being here. Before I get into this teaching of Marvel, which we're in the middle of, I want to just remind you next week is the beginning of the month in July, which means Growth Track. I brought my Growth Track manual. In Growth Track, we do that every Sunday, except for today. But every Sunday, week one, week two, week three, week four, we are helping you discover about yourself as well as discover about ourselves here at the church. And you get to literally grow closer to God and grow in who you are and who God wants you to be. We want you to serve around here, and for you to serve, we want you to go through Growth Track and discover how God's created you, and it's great. I love seeing and knowing the people who kind of graduate out of Growth Track, and they get so excited to get plugged in and find their place. And we have someone in Charleston. We have a great lady in Charleston that just like loved Growth Track so much. All the new people are like, if you want to go to Growth Track, you can go with me. I'll take you there. It's just this excitement because she's discovered, and a lot of people in the room have discovered, the importance of Growth Track and taking that next step and knowing how God wants to use you in his kingdom and around the Fields Church here. So what is it? It's 4 weeks in a row, very casual environment. I do some video teaching. Your Growth Track host is going to lead you through those 4 weeks. It's really a good time to just kind of settle in and discover about yourself, discover about the church. So I'm going to encourage you, what do you need to do? You just need to attend. Next week in Charleston, it's right after service in Mattoon. It's 10:40. It's during the 10:45 service. And, you know, you can talk to people at your locations of where. Look for those signs. Where's Growth Track? But we would love for you to go. You don't have to RSVP or nothing. We would just want you to attend. So come next week, Growth Track next week. If you need any information about this, find someone in a green shirt today. They'll help you out. They'll get you pointed in the right direction all about Growth Track. So let's get into today's teaching. We're in the middle of this series called Marvel. It's been fascinating that we are studying the book of Mark and we are literally marveling at the life of Jesus because the life of Jesus will change your life. When you begin to interact and have an encounter with Jesus, it is life-changing. And today, I know we've been showing a couple Marvel clips of different movies that the Marvels, you know, released. Today, I'm not going to wow you with any kind of movie clip today because the story that we are reading in Mark chapter 5, that's where we're at right now, that in itself is going to put you on the edge of your seat. And you're going to want to grab your morning popcorn or a cup of coffee. We really don't have popcorn today, but you do have a cup of coffee if you want one. And grab your phone and begin to take notes. You can go to the guide, www.thefields.guide, and you can take notes because today you're going to want to read through this story with me. All the scripture is there and take this in, okay? It's a good one. This is like, I know that Marvel has movies with tons of action and adventure and good and evil and just amazing, like, wow, I can't believe the storyline. Wait till we dive in to Mark chapter 5 today. Let's do that right now. Mark chapter 5, they are finding themselves in a position where they're going to be talking about and meeting a man who's been demon-possessed. And before I even read the first line, I know some of us in the room right now are like, oh, he's talking about demons, demon possession. That's kind of weird. I'm not sure about this. First of all, let me tell you, demons are real. And we have to understand that. Demons are fallen angels. And that Satan himself was the head of fallen angels. And then the other angels that rebelled against God, they were all cast out of heaven and now known as demons. And just like angels have this incredible spiritual insight and connection to God, these demons have this connection and insight to Satan. And they're trying to just fulfill what Satan wants to do, which is kill, steal, and destroy, lead you, tempt you away from God, and torment you, and do anything they can to disrupt your spiritual life with God. And so these demons are real. And I've even had some experience with some. Some you may have had some experiences with demons. I remember as a youth pastor, I was at a teen camp, and we were with these teenagers, and this one teenager just started to, it's kind of during a time of prayer, and begin to shake and yell, and different things were taking place. And me and this other friend, I think there's two other youth pastors, we kind of brought this person alongside, and we knew something was taking place, demonic activity. Something was so tormenting him, and we just prayed and prayed and prayed until there's this peace that came, that just came, and he would just settle down. And I don't like to categorize demon possession or demon oppression or was this person just tormented. Like, I don't know how to classify all those things, so I'm not going to get super deep in the weeds of, you know, how to identify. I can tell you this, Satan and his army of demons want to get into your world and into your space and disrupt you away from God. My wife and I, Joy, we were called into someone's house here at our church that there's a lot of demonic and weird supernatural activity taking place in their home. And we went into their home and we went into every room and just prayed and prayed for God's authority to take over and that Satan would have no space in this house. And we prayed just a declaration of prayer that the home and the family and the kids, that they would honor God, and that in the home was a home for God, and that Satan had no authority there. And so I've prayed with people individually at altars. I've been in someone's home. I remember just personally praying for someone who was just so messed up in such a perverted lifestyle. And when I was praying for them, they stopped me and they said, "I am not possessed by a demon." And I was like, whoa, I never said that. But then I started like getting the discernment going, Satan is totally messing with this person, if not in this person. And again, I don't know one way or the other, but definitely tormented, manipulated, and deceived. And I just continue to pray that God would do his supernatural work in that person's life. And if that person needed delivered from the grip of Satan, then I am praying God release them from the grip of Satan, because I believe that it is real. Now, I've never prayed with anybody and seen anybody like foaming of the mouth, but I can tell you this, I have some very good trusted friends in ministry that have. So some of those things take place, and it's confusing at times, and you've got to wonder what is actually taking place here. I've got really good friends that have been delivered from demonic activity out of their life. If they were the one in torment, they were the ones under the grip of the enemy, and they've been delivered. And so I can just tell you from just from generic stories without mentioning names, I've seen the activity of Satan trying to get into someone's life and cause so much disruption. And I know that it's ugly to think about. And I know sometimes it's uncomfortable. And I want you to know, I don't think that the devil's in the light bulb. Every time my light bulb burns out at the house, it's not the devil that did that. Or if I stub my toe in the middle of the night, that I did, like the devil didn't, you know, scoot my chair over in the middle of the night just so I'd stub my toe. So I don't think the devil's doing everything like that. But I do know that Satan wants to pull me away from God. And he wants to disrupt and torment. And at sometimes we open up the door so wide, he'll get in your life. And I believe he can possess and take people in a place that they never belonged, they never ever imagined that they would go. But they opened up the door to all that spiritual evil to get into their life. And so I say all that on the heels of when we read this story today, we realize that this isn't just a Bible story, a fiction story. This isn't just a fascinating story of a plot and a character. And wow, if this was a movie, this would be a great movie. I read this to say Jesus is really rescuing someone who was in complete bondage, and they were stuck with this just complete infestation of demonic activity in their life. So let's take a look at it. Mark chapter 5 says, "So they arrived at the other side of the lake." Now, if you were with us last week, they were on the other side of the lake teaching. Remember, Jesus was teaching about the farmer and the seed, and they were on the other side of the lake. So now they've taken the boats and the boat ride to the other side of the lake. and in the region of Gerasenes. And when Jesus climbed out of the boat, a man possessed by an evil spirit came out of the tombs to meet him. Now, this is the first thing that happened. Another, if you read it in another one of the Gospels, it says immediately. And so what happens is as soon as Jesus gets out of the boat, now let's paint this picture for a moment. If you've ever been in a boat, and they're getting up to the side and they were coasting into the shoreline. It's getting shallower water, and then they hit the sand, and now they're only in like 3 inches of water, and they're hiking up their robe, and maybe they're taking off their sandals or maybe not, and they have to stand in 4 or 5 inches of water, and then they get into the actual dry land, and maybe then they're putting on their sandals. And I can just imagine like they're like bent over putting on their sandals or retying them, and they look up and here comes this man right at them. Like as soon as they hit shoreline, here comes this man right at him. And it's someone who's possessed by an evil spirit living in the tombs. Immediately, that's what hits him. And Luke tells the same story, and Luke gives a little bit more detail. He says that for a long time, this man was a homeless man, and he was naked, living in the tombs outside of the town. So as soon as they get to shore, and they climb out onto the sand, and they begin to get onto the dry ground, here comes this naked man who is demon-possessed. And if we read more of the story, this guy's got chains that have been broken. He's bloodied. He's got dry blood on him. He's been cutting himself with rocks. And then it says that he's shrieking. Now, I can tell you, that would be something that as soon as you get out of the boat and that's what's coming at you, it makes you take another, like a second look at like, is this really happening? Now, let me rewind like 20 minutes before that. Have you ever been out on a lake in a boat? You know how relaxing that is? You know that right now it's summer and it's Sunday and there's going to be some people going to the lake. And if you would go to the lake after church and you would see, there would be some pontoon boats out there. There would be some boats just going for a joyride. Why? Because it's nice and relaxing. These guys just came from a lot of ministry. Jesus healing and the crowds are gathering in and they're just probably relaxing on this lake and they finally get to the other side. And as soon as they get to the other side, this is what meets them. This naked, just literally this demon-possessed man that's yelling and shrieking. That's what I want us to understand today. That's the picture that we have to understand. It says that the man lived in burial caves and could no longer be restrained even with chain. Now that in itself, in a Jewish culture, you couldn't be around dead bodies. This guy's living in the burial caves. There were people who would choose not to even move or live or build a home anywhere near this area because of just how geographically close they are to dead bodies. And here's someone who's living within the dead bodies. And in their culture, that would have been complete defilement. You could not be in that close proximity of the dead bodies. And he is more comfortable with dead bodies. That's what tells you the type of person that this man is. It's been totally infested with demons. And then he's been trying to be restrained with chains. Let's read more about that. Whenever he was put into chains and shackles, as often as he was, so people are trying to restrain this guy. And they're putting chains and metal and steel shackles around him. And whenever they were put in, when he was put into the chains and shackles, he snapped the chains from his wrists and smashed the shackles. No one was strong enough to subdue him. I don't know about you, but this is metal and steel, and he is tearing the chains and smashing the shackles. This is superhuman strength. Marvel, get out of here. This is a real story. And it tells you the power of the enemy. It also tells us that someone who is demonically just, possessed, and when Satan wants to do a work in someone's life, it's not just spiritual, but now it's physical. Spiritual and physical come together here. This person can rip chains apart. That's beyond his natural ability. This is beyond who he is as a person. This is who he is infested with demonic powers and evil spirits. gives a little bit more of a window. He says, day and night he wandered among the burial caves and in the hills, howling and cutting himself with sharp stones. This guy had no peace. Day and night, no rest. He's up in the middle of the night. I find it fascinating that the gospel writers and Mark, especially because that's who we're studying right now, knows this because they weren't there to hear that. This is his reputation. When Mark goes and they start to tell this story, they've gathered information about this and they said, this is the guy that is up day and night howling. That's this man's reputation. And if you're up in the middle of the night and during the day and you're cutting yourself, there's something internal that is just a mess. And this man has no peace. And he's getting no rest. And he's a self-harmer. He's a cutter. We know that in our own society, in our culture, those who are cutting are those who are wanting to feel pain. They're needing some emotion to be released. They're just wanting to feel something. Even if it's extreme pain, they're willing to watch the blood and see the pain because it makes them feel good because the emotional strife that's taking place in their life. And here's a man finding sharp rocks and cutting himself, and in the middle of the night, he's up howling. When Jesus was still a distance away, the man saw him and ran to meet Jesus and bowed low before him. Now, this is the verse that I stop and go, wow, what now? What? What's going on here? There's this demon-possessed man that, you know, he doesn't know who Jesus is, but the demons on the inside do. And I've been reading this and studying this and trying to dive into the theologians that are a lot better than I am about this. And they're saying that this demon-possessed man is not worshiping Jesus, but the demons inside know that they have to bow down at the authority and the power of Jesus. Even though they hate Jesus, they know that he is the Son of God. It wasn't worship, but it was acknowledgement. And then there's this tension of, I hate Jesus, and I know his power. There's this tension taking place. And I actually have been thinking about this for literally weeks. I've read this, and when our family was in Florida, Joy and I had a conversation about this very passage, about what it must have been like to have all this evil inside of you at the same time you know you need to bow down in the presence of the Son of God. And I honestly think that tension is still alive today in all of our lives at some degree. I know that we're not maybe demon-possessed today that I know of, but there's still that tension of there's this part of me that tugs toward the world, and there's a part of me that wants to bow down toward Jesus, and there's this war for our souls. Now, he's at the extreme, being infested by demons, but there's still a war on our souls. And we're still in the middle of the tug of war as well. I'm fascinated that even the demons are bowing down at Jesus. It's really it's just amazing that, let's take a look. Verse 7 says, with a shriek, he screamed, why are you interfering with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In the name of God, I beg you, don't torture me. For Jesus had already said to the spirit, come out of this man, you evil spirit. So now this conversation is this evil spirit with Jesus. And he's like, he's bowing down knowing the power of God and at the same time saying, don't interrupt. See the tension there? Like, I know that you're all powerful and I know I'm going to lose. But at the same time, he's still swinging for the fence going, let me mess this guy's world up. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. But are you fascinated that the demons bow down? Because really it's a living illustration of Philippians chapter 2 verses 10 and 11 that says this. At the name of Jesus, everybody say it, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth. And every tongue declare that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. See, everyone at some point, every entity, every spirit is going to have to bow down because the King of Kings is in the presence. You see, they knew, I hate him, but he's God. And the demons find themselves bowing. Now, Jesus had already said, like, come out of him, and then they're having this conversation with them. So now Jesus turns up the volume a little bit, and he demands something. He says this. Jesus demands, what is your name? And he replied, my name is Legion, because there are many of us inside this man. See, Jesus already said to come out of him, and they didn't come out of him, and he's asking, like, who am I dealing with here? Like, who are you, demon? And the answer was, it's not just one. Now, the word legion in the Roman sense would have been thousands. And so, demons, if not thousands of demons, had infested this person. And now Jesus knows what he's dealing with, thousands of demons inside this man. And at the same time, as much as they said, there's thousands of us in here, every single one of them knew that they were going to lose. In fact, this is what happens next. It says this. Then the evil spirits begged Jesus again and again not to send them to some distant place. So they weren't like, there's a thousand of us. You can't tell us what to do. There's a thousands of them begging Jesus, don't cast us far away. They knew they were going to lose. They knew they had no power. They knew they had no authority. Remember that today. They know they have no authority in the presence of Jesus. They have no authority. And they're begging him, don't send us far away. Which I think then fascinates me going, why is that? Now, some of the theologians I was reading and watching and listening to and trying to dive into this would say that maybe that helps us understand demons a little bit. Maybe there's some places they'd rather be that's better for them. Maybe they had a geographical assignment that they were supposed to be there. And so if Jesus cast them to a far distance place, they were then in disobedience of where they had been situated and assigned. Or maybe that land and that area was just fertile for sin and demonic power and disruption. We know this a little bit because it says that there were pigs nearby. You're going to find out about this in a second. Well, this was a Jewish culture. The Jewish culture, they're not supposed to eat pigs. And all of a sudden, there's a herd of pigs. And maybe there were some people that were pulling away from what they were not supposed to eat. And who knows what was taking place. And all these demons around in an area that may just have been fertile for sinful and demonic activity. All we know is the demon said, don't send us far from here. So as the story goes, Mark writes that there happened to be a large herd of pigs feeding on the hillside nearby. Send us into these pigs, the spirit begged. Let us enter them. Send us into them. Send us into the pigs. Let us enter them. So you know what Jesus did? Jesus gave them permission. One of the other gospel writers said that Jesus said, go. One word, go. And with that permission, the evil spirits came out of the man and entered the pigs. And the entire herd of about 2,000 pigs, how many demons were there? The entire herd of about 2,000 pigs plunged down the steep hillside into the lake and they drowned in the water. It was the biggest swine dive anyone had ever seen. Get that? Swan dive. Anyway, so why did that happen? Why would Jesus send them into these pigs and allow that to happen? A couple things happened during this moment. Now there's this physical evidence that this man has been liberated from the demons, and the demons are out of him and into these pigs. Like, they physically saw that. The herdsmen saw that. The townspeople heard about it. There's this evidence that whatever was in this man is out of this man, and now they're in these pigs, and they watch the pigs fall to their death. The second thing it does is it really exposes the demons for their true purpose, absolute destruction. That's what demons want to do. They want to destroy. They want to kill. Immediately when they got into the pigs, what did they do? They ran off the cliff to their death. complete destruction, immediate destruction. That's what they do. That's what God is saving us from, is an enemy that wants to kill, steal, and destroy. The demons want to get in and do whatever they can to disrupt, to torment, to possess, to alter who we are. And at the end of the day, they want to destroy you and your relationship with God. Now, what happened was all the herdsmen found out about this, and it says this: the herdsmen fled to the nearby town and the surrounding countryside, spreading the news as they ran. People rushed out to see what had happened. A crowd soon gathered around Jesus, and they saw the man whom had been possessed by the legion of demons. He was sitting there, fully clothed and perfectly sane, and they were afraid. How amazing is that? Then those who had seen what had happened to the others about the demon-possessed man and the pigs, they told everyone about it. Now listen, listen to this. This was a chaotic situation. The herdsmen watched all of their pigs die. That's their job, their livelihood. That's, you know, it's probably their boss's resource. And they start taking off running to the town to tell everyone. They're confused, and it's the guy who was demon possessed that usually howls in the middle of the night that was all bloodied and naked is fine, and my pigs are now dead. And this guy named Jesus showed up, and he was in the middle of the story, and they're telling the stories. They're running to the town, and everyone they see, they can't believe what happened. Like when I was in Tanzania last month, we saw herds of animals and probably counted, you know, wow, that person has 100, 200 goats. And it looked like a lot of goats. When we saw a couple hundred goats on the hillside, we're like, that's a lot of goats. 2,000 pigs took off and ran off this cliff. These guys are running and telling everyone. And there's chaos. And I'm not surprised that there's chaos. You know why I'm not surprised? Because that's what happens when Satan gets involved and creates deception and manipulation. The crowd began pleading with Jesus to go away and leave them alone. They're telling Jesus to leave, not thank you, no gratitude, no, not even an inquiry of like, how did you do that? And tell me more about this. And this guy has been set free and liberated from all this internal bondage. Like none of that conversation. No sense of wow and awe that this guy is set free. Just fear. Why? Because Satan loves to manipulate and deceive and create all that tension. And to be honest, they were more comfortable with thousands of demons being in their yard than they were with Jesus being in their presence. And I personally think that that's still the case today. I absolutely believe that people are a little more comfortable with the evil in our world than they are with the presence of God. I mean, think about it. Satan makes it easy. You don't have to change your life. You can keep watching what you want to watch, do what you want to do. It's all about you. You get to do what you want to do. Half of it's fun, pleasurable, and comfortable. Just go do your thing. It eventually ends in a slow, destructive death. But your entire life, if you're just around evil, it just seems okay. And there's no one asking you to change. In fact, they're actually telling you to keep doing it. But Jesus wants transformation. He wants surrender. He wants us to follow him, not follow the ways of the world. And so what we're seeing is people are more comfortable around evil and evil things than they are the presence. Let me just say it this way. We still live in a world where people are more comfortable in the presence of evil than in the presence of God. That's the world we live in. What happened to the rest of this guy? So as soon as Jesus, like, okay, it's time to move on, he started to get into the boat. Let's take a look at this. As soon as Jesus was getting back to the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged, I want to go with you. And Jesus said, now you have to go home to your family and tell them everything that the Lord had done. You go home and tell everybody. He didn't have any Bible college. He never been to a Sunday school class. He hadn't gone through growth track. He wasn't a part of groups. The only thing he really could just genuinely say was, I was really messed up until I met this guy named Jesus. I was really messed up on the inside. And then I met Jesus. The story ends and says, so the man just went off and he just went to all the neighboring towns, the 10 towns in the region, and he told everything, the great things that Jesus had done for him, and everyone was amazed at what he told them. You see, great things happen when we trust God and we don't get fearful of the devil. In fact, the demonic power in his life didn't have control of his destiny. And the demonic power in our world does not control your destiny either. Is Satan real? Yes. Are demons real? Yes. Do they control your destiny? No. We surrender to Jesus. Now, before I send you guys home today, let me just give you a couple observations from this story of this man who's demon-possessed. Number one is this, is we need to be careful of what we allow in our life. Because we can open the door to Satan creeping in. We need to be really careful. Our culture has been fixated with evil, and what happens is we get comfortable with it. And the more we're comfortable with it, we forget to lock the door. Oh, it's safe here. It's fine here. It's not a big deal. When we were in Tanzania, we were in a school and we were talking to the principal, the teachers, and some community leaders. We were having this opportunity to talk back and forth and just ask questions. We would ask questions about their country. They'd ask questions about our country. And we gave them some softball questions like, what kind of vegetables do you eat? And how old do the kids have to be to go to school? They looked at us and one of their questions was, why does your country like killing people? We're like, backpedaling. What do you mean? No, we don't like killing people. They're like, well, we watch your TV shows and we watch the movies from your country and it's all about killing people and it seems to be a good thing. We're kind of embarrassed. We're like, they got some truth to it. Like, that's what Marvel movies are all about. You know, it's like people die and there's excitement, all this, and we get comfortable. And the question is, if we get comfortable with evil and the loss of life and in immorality and lust and drug addiction and alcohol use, and we start getting comfortable, we're just opening up the door to the devil to come in. That's why Paul tells us to guard our heart. That's why Paul tells us in Ephesians, don't give the devil a foothold. Because he will wreck our lives if we open things up and allow him in. The second thing I'd like to just share with you guys is when Jesus solves our problems, sometimes it costs us our pigs. Sometimes you just got to pay the price of the pigs. You know how many addicts are like, I just want to quit smoking dope and quit doing drugs. I just don't want to lose my friends. I don't want to quit hanging out with those guys. Someone is in a really horrible relationship. They're like, I just wish I quit getting hit, but I don't want to leave that guy. Or just basic things like, you know, we do some consulting with other churches and they're like, we want to change. We just don't want to change anything. Like we need to reach younger people, younger crowd, younger, but just can we do it without changing? I've seen that in the health community. It's like, I want to lose a lot of weight. I just don't want to lose my eating habits. I still want to eat the good stuff. And so what happens is we don't like when things cost us anything. And when Jesus is going to solve our problems, it's sometimes going to cost you your pigs. You may have to lose some pigs in your life because you know you got to get rid of some of these things that the devil's put into your life. And we got to get rid of them. We have to say no to those things. And sometimes it's going to cost us. If I want to raise a godly family, I have to change what's on my TV. I got to change what we watch and what we say and who we hang out with. There's got to be some changes. I don't want to open the door to evil things. I want to slam it shut. I want to lock it shut. And the third thing is, do not fear the shriek of demons when Jesus is the Lord of your life. Demons are real and they're going to pop up and they're going to try to create havoc. But remember, don't fear the shriek of demons when he's the Lord of your life. He is greater than they are. The enemy wants to attack and create havoc, but we have Jesus as the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings. And nothing can come against that. 1 John 4:4 says this, when you belong to God, my dear children, you've already won a victory over these people because The Spirit who lives in you is greater than the Spirit who lives in the world. You need to know when you and I follow Jesus Christ and we have a real relationship with him and his Spirit lives in us, he in us is greater than anything else, any demon, any Satan, any enemy. It all starts with asking God to be a part of you and inviting the Spirit of God in your life. He is greater. When you belong to God and you've given your life to God, he'll protect you from all that enemies, all the enemies and all the evil. Listen, if you had a step that you need to take today, it's like, I've got to belong to God because I need greater is he inside of me. Greater is he. I need him inside of me. Why don't you close your eyes for a moment? Close your eyes for a moment. Ask yourself, is God inside of my life and protecting me from anything and anyone? And if you need to invite him into your life today, then pray this prayer. Let's pray right now.